Rebic, Rafa, tira, gol! Rafael Leão, oggi segna Leão, la mia giornata è iniziata così, oggi
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher, joined once again by Anthony Torgrud.
What's up guys, glad to be back. Yeah, every week starts the exact same with Ollie saying the same thing and me saying that, and we have Maddie, so.
And I'm excited for this week's episode. Same exact thing every week.
yeah, bang on. Consistency is key. We've got a more consistent lineup than Milan do at the moment. You know, given us three have been on back-to-back weeks now. But we've got a busy episode ahead anyway because we've got two games to recap and two games to preview and some other topics to talk about. So this should be an interesting one, definitely. And I am going to be conscious of time throughout this, don't worry. But yeah, I guess we better start with the game that came first chronologically. This was a bit of a different one for me to recap anyway because I was actually at the game. It was amazing to be able to see the team live in the flesh for the first time in about 2 years. It was at Anfield. It was our first Champions League game for 7 years, so over half a decade. Our first ever game at Anfield, which is amazing considering the history of the two clubs, especially in the Champions League. First game against them since 2007, that famous final where we got revenge in Athens. Didn't go our way this time. We all feared, shall we say, on our preview podcast that this might be a little bit of a step too far for our young squad, you know, a squad where most of the players haven't played in the Champions League. And it did prove to be just that. You know, I think it's fair to say that for the first 35, 40 minutes of the game, we were overrun. Pretty much all over the park by a more intense and a fitter team that's used to higher intensity than we are in the Premier League. Found ourselves a goal down. Thankfully, an important penalty save from Mike Maignan kept us in it. Went in 2-1 up at the break. Second half kind of reverted to type and it was wave after wave of pressure and we couldn't really get anything going. But overall, I walked away thinking, we lost by a goal. We had our moments, you know, some real memories made in that away end. Really, really obviously enjoyed both the goals going in. It was carnage. We weren't completely battered either. So I think there were some positives to take from it.
Yeah, I'd say there was actually a lot of positives to take from it. You know, one of the things we talked about a lot last season, and I guess the tail end of the previous one with when COVID hit, the lack of fans we thought was going to benefit a young squad. You know, they won't have to worry about being jeered, especially with the history leading into that, how we just were used to getting jeered in our own stadium. But they thought that was going to help the young squad. They wouldn't have to worry about the nerves. It'd settle in quicker. And we were right. You know, they look great. Then we get here, and this is our first one in a hostile environment with a huge atmosphere, with a packed stadium. And they were nervous. They looked scared. You could tell they were making real rookie-level mistakes for the first 30. Everyone was sloppy, and it was probably the worst 30 minutes of football I've seen from us in quite a while, to be honest with you. It could have been...
Which is weird to say.
Yeah, it is. It could have been like 6 or 7 nil towards Liverpool in those first 30 minutes. Like, it was brutal. And then something just clicked, and Rebic scored a beautiful team goal, and then was it Brahim got the next one that was also kind of created by Rebic as well, and all of a sudden we're 2-0-1 at the break, and halftime came at the best time possible for Liverpool because we obviously had the tide on our side at that point, but they were able to settle in. We got an immediate third goal that was called off after the halftime break. If that wouldn't have been called off, if it was good, I believe it was offside. I'm not 100%
it was offside.
If it wasn't, then that could have put the game away, you know, 3-1, like it's pretty rare you come back from that. But nonetheless, it didn't count and they came back. But I thought the second half was a totally different story. I thought we looked a lot more even, still outmatched. Like, there's no denying. I think Liverpool's a top five side in the world at the moment. And we brought it to them. We've scored more against them than any other team has this season. So, you know, there's nothing to really be disappointed outside of those first 30 minutes. And that can be chalked up to the first Champions League game in 7 years, and you know everything about it that we all know, we've talked about it a million times. Like, there was a lot of pressure and it got to them, but they settled in and we turned it around. So I'm not disappointed. Those away goals might come in handy towards the end of the group stage, who knows. Atletico and Porto drew, so we're actually not in a bad spot. You know, it's still doable.
Yeah, my biggest worry going to this game was that we were going to get absolutely destroyed and ruin all the momentum from the first three games of the season. We did lose a little momentum. We looked like shit in the first half, minus our two goals. It could have been way worse.
Yeah,
way worse. I'm overall happy with the performance. I'm happy. I'm not happy with the result, but based on what it looked like on the field, you know, in 3 years, when people look at that result, they're not going to think about what happened on the field. They're going to say, oh, 3-2, that's a close game. So mm-hmm. we had a close game, and I'm excited for the Atletico game next week.
Strange, isn't it? Because the way that things have been for us over the last 18 months when we've had this resurgence under Pioli, we are naturally always gutted when we lose a game because we feel like we're in every single game. And like, you know, when we lost away at Spezia and we lost away at Lazio, we were like, that's a disgrace. You know, the team should be ashamed. But this was the first time in like 2 years where we've lost a game and I've instantly not felt gutted. I thought, you know, we were beaten by a better opponent on the night and we still had our moments, you know. Mm-hmm. There's two ways of looking at the game, I think. The first is that it's, you know, a baptism of fire for those lads. As you said, AJ, the atmosphere. Now, Maddie will back me up on this, but the Anfield atmosphere can be regarded as a bit of a myth, you know, a lot of the times when it's not a big game, they're not up for it. But I have to say, and I'm not a big fan of Liverpool at all, but the atmosphere was incredible. It was just really, really loud. So God knows what it was like for so many of those young players out there on the field. And that's where we could have used someone like a Zlatan or a Giroud who has experienced it before, just to say, you know, just let's weather the storm here. And the other part of it is that from a tactical point of view, this was a pretty hard first game for us because we're coming up against a team that tries to do what we do, but they do it a lot better. And they've got 2 or 3 years ahead of us in where they are as a club. And the quality of their squad and everything that comes with consistent Champions League football and obviously the revenue of the Premier Leagues. So I wasn't surprised to see us, you know, like rabbits in the headlights after the first 30 minutes. We were completely overrun. It could have been worse. We could have been out of sight by half time, and that would have been really damaging for the morale. But I think the main positive that we showed is that all we need is 5 minutes. We need a good 5 minute spell to hurt a team. And we are never out of any game while there's a goal in it. And that for me is the biggest thing that we can take from it. Would I say that I was like proud? I mean, yeah, I guess proud of the resilience that we ended up showing after a difficult start. But we still got to hold our hands up and say that we were pretty much outplayed in every single area and deserved to lose the game. But I think it will be a very different game at San Siro because we play them in our final group game and it could be big. Never know, depending on how the results go between now and then, that could be a winner-takes-all qualifier, let's say. But yeah.
And there's a good chance they've already qualified by then as well, you know? Like, if they sweep the rest of the group.
So they, dude, every group stage that they've been in the past 4 years, they've barely gotten out of the group.
They've been in some tough spots, you know?
Yeah, so I do think that it's going to be closer than we all expect.
Wasn't it the season that they went on and won the Champions League that they only qualified in the last group?
Yeah, I think so.
I think
yeah.
it was against Napoli too. So hopefully it's not a Serie A thing.
Yeah, let's hope not.
Napoli beat them in one of those legs. So
yeah, they did.
I think that was with Ancelotti, right?
Was it? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah,
sounds about right.
Tops and flops from the game. Somebody said in the comments, and I like the idea of doing like our player ratings, but when we've got two games to recap, it's quite a lot to go through every single player that came on the field and give them a rating. But I think that this, I haven't really watched the game, and where I watched it from was like the fifth row back in the bottom corner of the stand. So I didn't get as good an overview of the game as I do normally. But I will say that
what a hard problem to have.
I know, it was tough. And the bus journey from London up to Liverpool, there and back combined, was a 13-hour round trip.
Really?
Because of traffic and because of motorway closures on the way back. Oof. So I got back in to the flat at 6:30 in the morning on
Thursday.
Oh, that's
awful. Yeah, it was that bad.
I will say,
what does that drive like on a normal day? That's like a
three and a half hours, but obviously... coaches can only go 60 miles per hour, so whatever that is in kilometers per hour. So that naturally 40. Makes it longer than So yeah, that was interesting. I mean, I slept on the way back. That was fine, you know. But I will say on the trip,
Milan fans.
Yeah, there were two coaches full of Milan Club London, okay. Which was really good. You know, all members and stuff. And it was just generally fun. You know, a lot of chanting and singing, and everyone were cracking the beers open at like 10 a.m., which I thought was commendable. And yeah, the way back dragged a bit, but it was still fun. Met a lot of good people. Met a lot of the guys at Milan Club Dublin as well, and they're all fantastic. So it was good in that sense. You know, there were 490 of our fans there. Could have been more if there'd been a bit more notice, so fans could come over from Italy. But you know, tickets went on sale the Monday before the game on the Wednesday, so there wasn't much choice there. But overall, it was just great to be there. You know, I kind of still have to pinch myself that I was there for our first Champions League game in 7 years, first game at Anfield and all that. But yeah, it was a great occasion, and it's just made me like, I can't wait for to get back to San Siro, hopefully in early January, and support the lads again. But yeah, anyway, back to it, tops and flops. So yeah, Brahim Diaz and Rebic stood out as the only ones in the first half who were trying to make things happen. Like they showed a bit of composure on the ball. Once Brahim started getting in between the lines, that's when the problems started coming. So I'll pick those two out. And I think there were a lot of players who were kind of absent. You know, we didn't get a grasp on the midfield through Kessié and Bennacer like I hoped we would. I think they were both a little bit off the pace, and Teo had a bit of a torrid time defending their right side, which is obviously Salah and Alexander-Arnold, who gets forward quite a lot. But my man of the match would have to be Tomori. He kept us in it, you know. Not often that a centre-back can be part of a team that concedes three goals, and we're looking at him thinking, wow, you know, what a player.
Yeah. And one of them, an own goal on him, you know. Mm. But I agree. Like, if you were to look at the scoreline and say, pick your two best players in a 3-2 defeat, and I were to tell you it was the goalkeeper and the center back that conceded an own goal, you'd probably laugh me out of the stadium. But that's the truth. I mean, they were the best players. Like, leading up to this, we all said, Mike's fantastic, but we haven't seen him tested. We saw him tested and tested again and again and again. And he's the first person since 2017 to save Mohamed Salah penalty. Do you know who was the one before that?
Yeah, the keeper was Jonas Lossel, and I was there for that as well.
Ollie's the good luck charm. Ollie's bad luck charm. But Maignan was fantastic. He kept us in the game. He kept us alive the whole time. Very happy with him. I mean, you could argue he made some mistakes on the goals, which... fair, you know, I'll never say no to that. Like, he still conceded three of them, but it could have been 8 or 9. It could have been really bad. And Tomori looked fantastic. He's shown that he's the only center back that really has experience against a Premier League side. Like, the pace on Tomori saved us a lot. I mean, he came out of nowhere to be everywhere, and it showed. So really happy with both of them. I'm gonna pick either of them as my top players.
I'm going to go Mike and Rebic as my top players, because without Rebic, both those goals do not happen.
That's fair, yeah. I think Rebic has been, and we'll come on to it with the Juve game, but I think Rebic has actually shown, and he's backing up my agenda from last season, that Rebic should absolutely be an emergency centre-forward over Liao every time, because he's showing that he knows how to do it. You know, he played in a front two at times while he was at Frankfurt, and I think he's just occupying the right spaces. He knows he's not going to bully physical defenders. You know, he knew yesterday that he wasn't going to get the better of Chiellini and Bonucci in a physical battle, so he was smart with the spaces that he took up and the times that he dropped in and the link-up play. So that's good to see. You know,
he beat them both in the mental battle, though.
He certainly did. Yeah, he outpsyched him, and I love to see that.
That killed me when he did that. Oh man.
And this is harsh because, you know, he's injured, so I'm kicking him when he's down at this point. But I thought Kier showed that he maybe isn't going to be up to the pace like that, you know. I won't say that he got completely rinsed or anything like that, and it was always going to be tough, but, you know, it was a tough examination for him. And Calabria struggled a little bit at times. He got rinsed at one point by Naby Keita, and I thought that was a little bit of a, you know. But... yeah, it's hard to. There were a lot of players that were like between a 5.5 and a 6.5. You know, there's no huge standouts as being like, wow, they were awful, or wow, they were match changers, you know, but not too bad.
You know, what's funny is if you pull up the who scored, I was just going to do it to pick my flop. They gave Tomori the worst rating, but it's because of that own goal. It just kills your rating so much.
They don't understand football.
Yeah, but the next one besides that was Kier. So
yeah,
that I mean that kind of adds up, which makes sense. You can't give your center backs high ratings when you concede three, but yeah, Kier just he's just a little too slow. I mean, he's a fantastic defender, but in a game against a team like Liverpool where they're literally just speed and shoot, like you got to be a bit quicker, and it's not a fault of him. You know, you can't. I guess you can speed train, but like. Everyone's got their, you know, their cap, you know, that's not like muscles. You can't grow more speed, you know? So it is what it is.
Do you think that Liverpool underestimated us on the attack?
No, I don't think so. I think both of our goals were very good team plays. I mean, when we started the first 30 minutes and that at best, we made 2 to 3 passes in a row before giving the ball away or sending it out for a throw-in. And then all of a sudden we have a 6, 7, 8 passed one-time flick play that leads to a goal. Like
that would catch anyone off guard.
Yeah, yeah. I think that – I don't think they underestimated us.
Maybe if you look at it from a Liverpool point of view, you'd be a bit annoyed that nobody tracked Rebic's run for the goal. Like he was wide open to slot in that equaliser. And then for the second goal, we kind of did what we did for the first goal by, you know, playing it initially down the left side and then using a bit of a central overload to then get the ball into space again out wide on the left and the cutback and, you know, tried his best Robertson to stop it on the line, but Brahim was waiting. But we had bodies in the box. That was the thing. You know, it was 3-2 aim at in the box. So we definitely took the confidence from that equaliser. But yeah, it's what it is. I will say, Jordan Henderson, I've watched him twice now live in the last few weeks. I watched him play for England at Wembley. Now, it was against a rubbish opponent, but was in tops tier, so I could sort of have an overview. And watched him live at Anfield. And I think he's kind of underrated as a player, you know. He can run the game on his day. He's really good at distributing the ball and he plays an important role in the midfield. So I think that just shows what we're up against. These are players that are like memed by fans of other clubs. And yet when we come up against them, you realise they're not that bad. You know, they're not terrible at all. So yeah.
The irony of that is when he came on, I was like, all right, we're in good shape. It's Jordan Henderson. And he scored that screamer. And I was like,
yeah. I thought he was really good. I'm not going to lie.
I thought Mane was going to do way more than he did.
So did I. I thought he was going to be a real threat.
I was going to say with the Kier thing, we might have been in even more trouble if they had started with Mane and Salah and played Jota down the middle. You know, him dropping in as like a false nine and then having, as they do that spear run, you know, Salah and Mane both running in behind at the same time. I mean, that would have been tough to deal with. But thankfully, they didn't play that. And I don't think Origi was terrible, but still, it's a bit of a different threat to deal with. Yeah, that's it. Not terrible. But we start the Champions League group stages with a loss. The other result, as you mentioned, was a draw between Atletico and Porto. We'll do the preview, obviously, next week, but it makes our next game against Atletico at home massive. I won't say a must win, because, you know, they're still a good team and nothing's decided in the first two games, but we definitely need something.
Yeah, need a point.
I'm also going to say in the comments last week, y'all said I was way too harsh on Ibra, and he's injured again, so that harshness was rightfully deserved.
I mean, he's apparently going to be on the bench on Wednesday night. So,
And to be honest, I think that's a dumb decision.
I just leave him.
Yeah, don't do anything with Ibra until the Atletico game. Like, that's the most important one. We're getting 6 points from the Spezia Venezia, you know, the rhyming clubs. Like, don't risk Grandpa. Like,
it's more Venezia Spezia because it's in that order.
But whatever, I don't care. They're both getting relegated. It doesn't matter.
Hey,
I did pick
easy on Venezia.
Well,
we've got to go there. We don't want to get assaulted. So
those Venice fans are real mean, I hear.
Yeah, they're gonna throw me in the Grand Canal. Like, okay.
They're like the Fulham of Serie A. Like, small ground by the water. You know, nobody takes them that seriously. But yeah, Next game then, Juve. Here we go. Let me get the thing. So we played last night against Juventus at the Allianz Stadium. Last season we won there 3-0. Given the injury crisis that we had no sort of natural number nine who was fully fit. So we had no Giroud, no Ibrahimovic. We were missing midfield depth, Bakayoko out, Krunic out. Messias, nobody knows what's happened to him, but he seems to have been on a burger binge over the summer and he's like still not back to full condition. And then Calabria was out as well, which was not ideal. Forced a few changes. Pioli decided to mix it up a little bit for this one and played Tomori as a right back. In inverted commas, because it didn't really look that way when we were in the game. Went a goal down early to Alvaro Morata, which was a bit of a low blow.
It was lucky.
You know?
It was lucky for them. Not often you concede from your own corner kick,
which I think reflects badly on us. You know, that was early inattentiveness. I said at halftime when things weren't going so well that I thought, as much as it was physical, like fogginess, you know, the players having tired legs and stuff, it was more mental. Like the decision making wasn't its usual sort of crispness, preciseness. We were giving the ball away a lot. We didn't manage to dominate the midfield in the first half like I thought we might do, because that was our one area of strength against the 4-4-2. We didn't generate anything really scoring chance wise, and it was clear that Juve then were going to sit deep and try and defend that lead, but they didn't manage to do so. I guess the sign of a good team is one that manages to pick up a positive result even when they don't play at their best, and in the end we could have gone on and won that game, but I'm looking at it as a point gained.
Yeah, it's definitely a point picked up. Had we had our full strength starting 11, it would have been a win, but draw would be 2 points dropped. You know, the way this was Teo's worst game in a Milan shirt, and it comes down to this shoehorned formation that we tried. I mean, we didn't know that we were going to need to do this all week long. You know, like we only had a couple days of practice, so they clearly didn't get the 3-5-2 down or whatever we were running, but it was a three at the back, and that made Teo have to play more defensively. It didn't allow him to get forward as much. And he's not very good like that. So he wasn't making those runs. And then no one's doing the overlap for Salamakers. And without that, he's kind of worthless. Like, that's why everyone's like, we need a new right winger, blah, blah, blah. He fits in our system with the overlap from Calabria. But by himself, he's not a natural right winger. And he doesn't look strong enough doing it. He can't fall back for defensive duties if there's no one there overlapping to protect, you know. And it left him open the entire time. And that's where we were getting exposed. I hate to say it, Kier getting hurt was probably the luckiest thing that could have happened to us, because it forced us to make a change.
Yeah.
And once Kalulu came on, the second half was when we switched back to the old system. But once Kalulu came on, we looked a lot better, because he's at least more in tune mentally with the right back position, because he's played there before. But the second half, we turned it around. We went back to the old system. Teo finally is making overlapping runs. Salamaker has something to overlap. And all of a sudden, we're working again. We're creating chances, and boom, Rebic goal. And then Kalulu almost scored another one. So had Kalulu started from the first minute, or Calabria not been hurt, we win that game easy. Because Juve were toothless. They didn't do much. They had one goal that was
they wasted a lot of counter. Time.
They yeah. Did. Can I read out that I stat at this point? Yeah. There was 95 minutes. So obviously 45 plus two added, then the second half plus 3 minutes of added time. That was 95 minutes. The ball was in play for 48 minutes. Pioli came out after the game. He was the one who got told that stat and said, it's no wonder that teams like us struggle in Europe against intense sides. And that's right. You know, you're playing the game at a snail's pace. The stoppage is every few minutes. The referee kind of lost control of the game with some of the tension that there was. And then, you know, we've just played a few days ago at Liverpool where you literally don't get a break for 90 minutes because they're just at you all the time. And I think it's a valid point. It doesn't help the product, you know, from a broadcasting, from a Serie A brand point of view. But as us fans, especially with us trailing in the game for most of it, it's just really frustrating. You know, we need to do better. I say we, the officials and everyone connected with how the game runs needs to do better.
It wouldn't have been like that had they not had such an early goal. I mean, they literally parked the bus because they knew they couldn't do anything else. And playing 10 men behind the ball, like, you're always going to have a better time defensively when you're just parked like that. So they were just holding their lead. That's what Allegri does. He's desperate to get his first win since April of 2019 in the league. So he needs to do what he's got to do. And
good tweet.
failed to do that. Thank you. I have like 300 likes, so happy of that.
Easy.
But still, yeah, I mean, we could have won that game. Kalulu had his chance at the end. Great save by Chesney on it. If that's someone who's more attacking prevalent, then probably a goal. I mean, he shot straight at the keeper, but I don't expect much from a third or fourth string right back, you know, or technically center back.
18 right back. Or 19.
20. Yeah, still.
Low-key, Kalulu is going to become a legend for this club. I mean, he's never played anywhere else professionally for the first team. If he sticks out and does well, every time he comes on, I'm like, this kid's not bad, you know?
It's funny because while Kalulu was having a fantastic game, the ex-Leon kid was having a fantastic second half for us against Juve. A Leon kid called Lucas Paqueta was busy scoring past Donnarumma for Leon. So that was an interesting
one. He looked fantastic, dude.
It's annoying, isn't it? Because he's doing really well. I still don't disagree with our decision to sell him. Same with Locatelli, to be totally honest with you. And Andre Silva, and all these are like, they're circumstantial. Like, it's one thing to succeed in Serie A. I don't think the ingredients were there for either of them to succeed in Serie A, but they've gone to leagues where
Paqueta
they're better
could
suited.
Succeed in this team. Possibly. Right now with this system, he could have. He was never going to work under Gianpaolo. Paqueta.
Locatelli. Oh, Paqueta.
Yeah. I don't think his personality never worked under Gianpaolo. I mean, there was
he only took a look at him, though.
Brazilian. He did, but I think he was so defeated at that point already because he came in with so much hype. And then it was his third coach in less than a full season.
Yeah.
And then we shipped him out. And I don't think that was fair on him. I think he deserved a better chance. Mm. And with some consistency, he probably would be doing well. But, you know, that was – how much did we get for him? Like 25?
20 mil. Pretty much bang on 20 mil. So we didn't make a loss.
Someone. I don't remember who we reinvested it in, but obviously it was necessary to get us where we are. So, you know, it is what it is. But when he scored, he turned back and pointed at Donnarumma. It was funny. And then he did his little dance thing. It was nice.
Quality.
So there must have been some tension there during the Milan days, I bet.
Yeah, I'm just remembering back to the time when Marco Giampaolo famously said he needs to be a bit less Brazilian sometimes. I'm thinking more and more I think about that, it's incredibly racist, first of all.
It's extremely. Like, how do you want to play for the club after that? Like,
also, and then I remember, didn't he score or he got an assist?
Brazilian.
Yeah.
Right. Like, there's so many world-class Brazilians that do the stuff that Gianpaolo was saying don't do.
He was a terrorist, was Gianpaolo in footballing terms. He destroyed a lot of the creativity in that team. Suso, let's play him centrally. Oh,
I said it so many times during Pioli's season. I was like, Gianpaolo set us back years. Like, Pioli had to do so much to get us just to that sixth place spot.
Not just tactically, but like a psychiatrist. He needed to heal those players. And here we are in a position where you fast forward the timeline, we're semi unhappy with getting a 1-1 draw at Juve, despite us having an injury crisis.
Well,
so
it's because you're always dropping points against these relegation sides. It's so frustrating.
They are a second bottom, which is just fantastic, isn't it?
Third bottom now. Now they're 18th, but
So we're joint top anyway. Inter beat a processed meat 6-1 at the weekend. That's AJ's. I can't take credit for that.
It's still great.
Beat the flat cat Mihailovic, who just seems to bend over for them every time, but it is what it is. So we're behind on goal difference, but we're virtually joint top. Inter's schedule is a nightmare coming up.
I don't think it's that crazy as everyone else is saying, but I do think they're only getting 4 points out of their next five.
Yeah, so, I mean, that would be enough to set them back a bit. I mean, I don't know, because I can't say, I topped them up before the season and picked them to finish second, but I also picked Juve top, so I know nothing about the game. But still, I don't think they're a bad side.
I think Juve out yet. They could.
Oh, yeah, they'll win their next game against Spezia, and then we'll see what happens, you know, once they get that first win under their belts. The talent's still there, and Chiesa, you know, if he'd have started, maybe, I don't know, whatever, this isn't Sempre Juve. And then... Inter's next game's coming up are tough, so we've got a couple of games coming up that we'll preview in a second that we should be taking 6 points from. Napoli play tonight. We're recording on Monday. Napoli could go top tonight and keep their perfect record.
Tops and flops for Juve.
Oh yeah, tops and flops. Good shout. It's too obvious to say the top is Rebic, and I'm guessing one of you two is going to say it, so I'll stay clear. Yeah, that's fair. I think it would also be too obvious to say Tonali. Now, I don't want to be that guy. He had a good game. He had a very good second half. He won the battle against Locatelli. You know, people were billing it as if it was like, it showed a lot of bitterness from some of our fans to make it out like, well, we need to get one over on the kid who used to play for us. I didn't really see it that way. I just wanted a good performance from Tonali. But he did have more touches, more accurate passes, a far better pass accuracy, more key passes, more crosses completed, more chances created, more shots blocked. He was just better in every single category, which was good to see. But I'm still going to go with Tomori again. I don't know why. There was just something about... I felt sorry for him being planted on the right side of the defence at first. I don't think that helped him. And I didn't really understand the logic behind doing that. But then with the turnover that happened because Kier had to come off, Kalulu coming on, that second half was as close to a perfect defensive performance as you're going to see. There were times when they were trying to hit us on the counter to get that second goal and they came close. He made a crucial intervention challenge last man at one point that actually had Morata appealing for a penalty when it wasn't at all. And yeah, I thought he was really good, but I've gone for my pick as being a bit left field on that one.
Yeah, I'm going to change mine, actually. I mean, Rebic is fantastic. I think he's the first Milan player ever to score in three straight games against Juve. Someone in the comments fact check me. I know you guys are going to anyways. I'm sure someone did it in 1966 or something. I'm actually going to pick Kalulu because he changed the game. Once he came on, everything changed. The system, the game, the goal, the almost goal. So I'm going to go Kalulu.
Yeah, that's a fair pick.
I'll go Tonali. He's been unbelievable since the season started. And Juve's a big game at Juve, and he did not shy away.
Yeah, I agree with that too.
Flop. Now, this one for me is quite difficult because there are multiple candidates for this. As AJ said, I think it was Teo's worst game in a Milan shirt. What for me, so we were obviously, there's a Milan data tweet that you can find and it shows the average position of each player. We were definitely playing a three at the back in the first half before the injury. It seems to me that whenever we try to artificially push Teo further up the pitch, he has a worse game. He's almost better with the surprise factor of coming from a genuine left-back position. And I think Juve were well prepared for the way that we were going to approach it after those first few minutes, especially with the goal behind them. But I'm going to go with Kessier. You know, that's two games in a row now. Anfield, tough one, admittedly. He is still 24, blah, blah, blah. But the supposed president of the team has kind of gone missing in two huge games there. And I bet his agent will be saying, I'm trying to get you 8 million here. You're not exactly doing me any favours with that. But I thought he looked slow, predictable on the ball, tired more than anything. Now, whether that's a mental cloudiness that comes from everything hanging over his future or whether he's just knackered and he's still not back at 100% condition because obviously he missed the first two games of the season, I don't know. But we need to start seeing something. Maybe the next two games being Spezia and Venezia, we're obviously going to lose both of them now I said this, but maybe that's a bit of a blessing. He can get back to feeling what it's like to dominate in the midfield. And maybe it persuades him to be like, I've got a pretty good offer here. Then he signs and then we can move forward together because he's still ultimately one of the best midfielders in the league. But he just had another off game. That's what I'll say.
That's what I'm thinking. I think it's a tactic to get a lower contract. I think he's too nice of a guy to accept this or to want this 8 mil that his agent's pushing for. So he's playing bad. So his agent's like, look, we got to accept the 6.5, bro.
Love it.
That's all I could do. I think the easy out is Teo because realistically he was the flop of the match. A really harsh one to pick, but I'm also going to go with it. Kier. I mean, he didn't play much, but that's why. So
looks a bit off the pace, didn't it?
Yeah.
Again,
Daniel Maldini, he had like 40 seconds. I'm kidding.
Why are you always hating on him, man?
I was so pissed when I saw him coming on, though, because I thought we had a corner kick at that last moment. So when Maldini's coming on, I'm like, we just saw him not eat on the Liverpool game. I was like, bring on Pellegri if we're just doing it for 40 seconds.
I thought Pellegri's injured.
Corny. I have no idea.
No, he was on the bench. With you.
Okay.
What was interesting? Yeah,
it was a throw-in.
What was interesting is I remember Daniel Maldini making his senior debut, and that was when we had a 93rd minute corner against, I think it was Sassuolo or Sampdoria at home. I remember thinking, why the hell are you bringing him on for a corner? as the last kick of the game. You know, bring on another centre forward, or even bring on a centre back. You know, they're more of a threat from corners. Yeah. And he kind of did the exact same again. You know, he got more time at Liverpool, which I thought might have been damaging for him, but he did not too bad. But then that yesterday, I'm just thinking, of all the players to throw on, it's a guy who's probably never scored a header in his career, you know?
I think that he has to be showing something in training that they like.
Yeah, his last name.
No, dog, they just offed his older brother so fast. So he's clearly doing something.
Yeah, Paolo knew.
I genuinely think he got minutes against Liverpool because he turns 20 next month before the next game, and they don't want to have three generations of Maldini teenagers debuting in the Champions League.
Yeah, but that's they would have put him on with like a minute left.
Well, he's now the youngest because they're like, ooh, no good.
He's the youngest of the Maldinis to appear in Europe. In terms of his dad, his granddad was 23.
The worst of the Maldinis.
Cesare was 23 when he made his European Cup debut, and Paolo was 20. Which I didn't know, because Maldini made his debut when he was like, Paolo Maldini made his 15. Debut when he was like 16. But no, he was 20 years and however many. No, he was exactly 20 years old when he made his debut, because I remember looking up the data afterwards.
Oh, it was now, his birthday?
Yeah, it was his birthday. Okay. I wondered, and I need to look this up. It might be because we were in the UEFA Cup or something in the years
that's probably
prior.
What it is. Because
we struggled in the mid-80s when he was coming through. You know, we didn't really fight for titles and stuff. Then Berlusconi came along and we got really good. So maybe that was his first chance. That would make sense. That's that done. Venezia Spezia. Love this.
What's my flop? Throwing me
under
the bus.
You're our flop.
Who am I over here on the bottom? Just so
go for it, mate. Who's your flop? And I'll even remove this.
Cassier.
Okay, brilliant. For the same reasons as me.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, sweet. Now the rhyming couplet.
To Kevin De Bruyne. Let me talk. man.
So what do we know about Venezia?
It's a beautiful city.
They have great city. Americans. Can't wait to go.
They do have two Americans, yeah.
Awesome
jerseys. Ollie doesn't like them.
No, I don't like them. I think they're overrated.
They have a female on their team that is very attractive.
They have a what on their team?
A female on their women's team.
Oh, that would make sense a lot of them. If they had a female. Oh, that's another belter.
I bet the whole women's team is women.
I don't know. Some of them you have to doubt. Probably
we'll leave it there.
Yeah. So we're coming up against Venezia and Spezia in the next few days. They actually played each other at the weekend, and Spezia won their first game of the season, 2-1 in the last minute. Now, I think that shows where Venezia are at, really. I think they're going to struggle this season. I've picked them to go back down, as I think you both did. Maybe it shows the kind of spawny nature of Spezia as well. And we know that they're a bit of a ball-like of a team. We lost their 2-0 last year, but I still don't rate Thiago Motta as a manager. So their squad, I'm looking down it. There's not loads and loads of names that stick out as people I know, and I'm trying not to be disrespectful to them here, but they do have an American called Gianluca Busio, who's the other? Tanner Tesman. There you go.
He's actually pretty hyped out here.
Busio is more hyped, I think.
You think so? Okay. Well.
Yeah, he's made more stars for Venezia, so I'm assuming so.
Fair enough.
They also have Mattia Caldara, who's on loan from us, and they also have Ethan Ampadu, who's from Chelsea.
Really? They got Ampadu?
That's an interesting loan. Obviously, they're not full
they're
of household
owned
names.
By Americans.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are. Their manager, Paolo Zanetti, who is obviously a mix of Paolo Maldini and Javier Zanetti. I don't really like that. But Paolo Zanetti has done a good job with them. However, you've got to remember they finished fifth last season and came up through the playoffs. So I don't know if the caliber of their team is particularly brilliant.
Yeah. I mean, that says that over the length of the season, they're probably going down, but they have a few one-off games in them where they could pull something out. Hopefully not against
us. Yeah. coming up through the playoffs is obviously good because it proves that they can perform in high pressure games. But they're currently, I want to say, they're 14th in the table. I think they're going to be fighting against the drop for most of it. And that is the extent of my analysis on Venezia. I just don't have a big enough sample size to go on, really. But with that being said,
Venezia is 17th in the table. Spezia is 14th.
Mixed up.
Both above you, Dave.
Yeah, God bless them. With that being said, I think we're going to get the win. I don't think it's going to be all guns blazing like Cagliari was. I don't think we have a ton of energy and intensity bottled up in us. It's been a demanding last week. I would be more than happy to get a couple of goals in the first half and then just take it a bit steady. Because it's not like the end of the week and then we get a week off. I mean, we've got, you know, games coming thick and fast. We've got Atletico a week on Wednesday. I'm going to go 2-0.
2-0 works. I think Pellegrini should start. And then if we aren't up at halftime, bring Rebic on. But I think even though Giroud and Zlatan will be on the bench, don't play him. Unless it's absolutely dire. But like I don't think it will be.
Unless we need a goal. Yeah, as simple as that.
Yeah. If we need a goal, sure, bring on the
Yeah, you can goals, give them 15 minutes and tell them they don't have to move as much. They don't need to press.
Yeah,
you know,
stay in the box, wait until the counter. Yeah.
Actually, that's a good point. I'm going to we'll name an 11 and you can see if you disagree. But for me, if there was any doubts about how we should line up in the Juve game because of the threat they have in this one, this is the time when you can play Florenzi at right back, I think, and probably get away with it. Tomorrow... Go on.
Go ahead. Oh, I was just going to ask you if Calabria is coming back or how serious
is he? I don't know. Atletico apparently will be the game that he's back. Same with Kier.
Then start Kalulu. He deserved it after his game.
A more attacking fullback, maybe, but Kalulu definitely has a shout. Though.
Yeah. I think Kalulu is an attacking fullback, he just hasn't had a chance.
He's never scored.
I'd say Florenzi.
Whereas Florenzi has plenty of goals in the bank. But yeah, I know what you mean.
We'll do Kalulu right back, Florenzi right wing, and let Salamakers kind of.
I think he needs a rest. To be fair,
yeah.
And then obviously Romagnoli tomorrow should be the centre backs with Kier's injury. Yes. Teo plays again, I think. I mean, there might be the temptation to give Balotelli a game because Teo is not really been at the races. So maybe this is the game to rotate a little bit.
I think that's a good call as well. Yeah. I forgot about him.
Let's do that. And then I keep Kessié in there and hope that he can play himself
into his form. Start Benacer this time.
And start Benacer, give Tonali another breather. Yeah, Florenzi right. It's going to have to be Brahim down the middle again, isn't it? Because Messiah still isn't fit.
Maldini, he's got minutes in the last two games.
Maybe.
Like if
maybe
we're taking this
game
as lightly as we possibly can, we don't have a choice. It's always a mistake, but like if that's what we're doing, then let's do it, you know?
I think it's going to be – I don't think he's going to start Pellegrini for whatever reason. I think it's going to be Rebic, and it might be a relay job.
Yeah,
and then Liao on the left again, and then we'll see. One thing I will say as an observation on the last two games, I just don't think Liao and Teo have anywhere close to the same chemistry as Teo and Rebic do. It just isn't there. It's just not. They don't seem to click in the same way. But I don't know Teo's not being at it, and Liao's like not got anybody to find really. With passes and all that, but I don't know.
Well, and Liao didn't play a whole lot in that position last season.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just going to take him a little bit longer to get in the swing of it.
Yeah, fair. So that's the 11, I guess, and predictions.
I think we're all going too well, unless Maddie's got something.
I was going to predict a draw.
Really?
I don't know why. I'm just feeling like we are going to go into the game thinking we're hot shit, and it's going to bite us in the ass.
It does happen.
Just looking here, we'll move on to Spezia now. Spezia only have 19 players in their squad, and some of them don't even have numbers. At least this is as of their Wikipedia page, so maybe they're quite depleted. I don't know.
What's their they play midweek as well, right? Who do they play? Oh, they play Juve on Wednesday.
They do, yeah.
So congrats, Juve, on your first win of the season.
Yeah.
Jeez, that is ridiculous.
Yeah, I know. Okay, so does say as of 23rd of July, so maybe that's been updated now. But yeah, I mean, there are some names in there, to be fair. I like Martin Ehrlich. He's a good centre-back. Jeroen Zoet was at PSV. I remember that. I remember Daniele Verde. I'm sure Daniele Verde scored against us before. He's had a bit of a career in Italy. And then they've got Mbalazola, who's an interesting striker. Jacopo Salas, we were linked with him quite briefly over the summer as a potential backup left back. I don't think he's terrible either. They have a player under contract called Lorenzo Colombini.
That's funny.
Yeah.
I think this is going to be the blowout game, to be honest. I think they're going to be, like you said, they're a thin squad. They're playing Juve midweek. We're ideally going to rest most of all our players. And then this game, we're going to put in some big boys to get minutes before Atletico. I wouldn't be surprised to see Zlatan either last 30 minutes or from the start, to be honest, and Giroud the other portion of that game. So I think this one's a 3 or 4 nil.
Do you know, I hope you're right on that, but I'm just learning more about Spezia as I go down their page. They lost to Udinese the game before last, and the guy who scored the winner in that was a guy that Milan were linked with repeatedly for like months and months, called Lazar Samardzic, and he came through Hertha Berlin's academy, and he got a move to Leipzig, and we were like, oh, we've missed out on another player to Leipzig, and they binned him off after a year to Udinese. So goes to show they don't get everything right either. And then they won at Venezia, and they got Juve midweek, as you say. They won in the cup as well against Pordenone, not that that's a massive scalp or anything. But yeah, I'm going to predict that this is another tight one. I don't know what it is, but maybe I'm just scarred from losing there last year, but this feels like a different team that we're facing this time. But I'm going to say we edge it 2-1. Yeah, worst manager as well. I mean, I think Italiano added a lot of value to that squad. So, I'm going to go 2-1. Win. Maddie?
3-0.
3-0, dub.
I agree.
Nice. Right, let's do some questions quickly, and then we shall wrap up. I love Kyrie asks, do you think that the contract renewal is affecting Kessié's game? We briefly touched on it. I would like to think no, because I like to think that any professional footballer has the ability to shut off outside noise and focus on just playing a game. But I don't know. I don't know. There has to be some reason for a bit of a drop-off like he's had. He's gone from dominating every game to being a little bit lackluster in the last two. I want to put it more down to fitness than anything else. I think we may have rushed him back a little bit, or, we need to keep an eye on that.
Maldini said that he's been in contact with his agents for a year and a half, so we know he could perform during talks. Remember, he had his first injury with our team recently, and he's just coming back from that. So it's fitness, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I hope it's not contract talk, so I'm going to say it's fitness, but I have no idea.
Mm. Tough one. Only there's one of them. All we can do is speculate, really. I'd love to know what goes on in the meetings. Like when Massara went to Bologna to meet with Kessié's agent, I'd love to know what was said in that, because they were there for hours, apparently. I mean, like, how long can you possibly negotiate before you get bored and start talking about other stuff?
But that means that, like, it's hopeful. Like if they were meeting for hours, that means that they're being constructive instead of, like, oh, we're not budget on this. All right.
Yeah.
Fuck
yeah.
You.
Yeah, see that's later. True, actually.
Yeah. Christian Espinoza, should we sell Kessié and Romagnoli this January transfer window to avoid losing them for nothing? I don't think we are going to. I don't think that's our policy. I think we're either too proud or we want them for the full season to help us achieve our targets and that kind of thing. There has to still be the hope of renewing Kessié, but I think Romagnoli's gone. Like, it doesn't sound like we're negotiating over his renewal at all. The opportunity came up to get something back for him in January and we really don't see any reason to keep him beyond the summer, then I would do that, because he is still valuable. He's in his prime. He's our club captain, you know. He's an Italy international. I would consider that.
I think we're kind of resigned to allowing him to leave right now. I mean, Mino's publicly saying he's going to Juve on a free. Like, that's ridiculous. But I think we're going to see in the next coming games a resurgence. We already are seeing that right now, and we might go, hey, Kier's old. He's getting hurt now more often. Romagnoli's looking better. Maybe we renew him and hold him on for the future. You know, I mean, like you said, he's in his prime. Like, I think there's a lot of good years left in him, and I think we'd be silly to let him go. I was all for it last season when he was in the pits, but he's climbed out of them. He's doing well. Keep him, you know? If we could hold on to him for a few more years, I said do it. The renewal would be hard.
It's that old thing of if we were to buy a replacement who was just like him, you know, 27, an international, a leader by status, it would cost us more than it would to probably keep him at the same salary or with a little bit of a pay rise. So you have to factor that in. I agree with Kier. I think he's going to suffer more and more injury problems. You know, he's 32, and our playing style gives him a bit of a battering, I think. I wouldn't be surprised if he misses like half the season for us in the league in terms of games, which would be sad, obviously. But we knew this about him last season. His muscles just aren't the same as perhaps what they once were. So we need to prepare for that. And Romagnoli, the more he steps up, the more important he's going to feel and the more he might give thought to the idea of staying around. I can see him going to Juve or Lazio, one of the two, and I don't think Lazio will pay what he wants. Well, so.
Yeah, I was saying, I don't think that Lazio is going to pay him his contract. And at Juve, every game's a big game, so he's going to suck.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, he did good against them this week, I thought.
Yeah, he was fine.
Yeah. Dan Window, a lot has been said about the growth and improvement of the team. What do you think of Pioli's improvement? Squad depth helps, but recently it seems he's got his subs right more often than not, which was a criticism last year. Yeah, good point. I think I mentioned it, you know, a few times that Pioli acknowledges that he's not the finished article as a coach. He's made tactical tweaks and adjustments. He has got better with his in-game changes, I would say that much. And overall, I think he's benefiting from a squad that's getting stronger window by window. But at the same time, you've got to give him full credit for the job that he's done, considering where we were when he came in to where we are now. And yeah, he's adapting, he's changing, he's not fixed. I think he's like half manager, half coach. He does a good job of keeping everyone happy and motivated. And the dressing room has a nice balance to it of youth and experience. But at the same time, he's a good head coach as well. I think he's made a lot of players better. You know, just because they get a year older in the calendar doesn't make them automatically a better player. They have to have it coached into them as well. And I think he does a good job of that, so I'll give him praise.
Yeah, I think it's hard to criticize him. He's done a really good job. And like you said, his man managing has improved. His substitutions have improved. That was my main criticism of his last season. So I'm happy with it. Yeah.
What was the question?
How purely improved as well as the squad.
Oh, 1,000%.
One thing I will say about Pioli, that there's like one particular like subplot to his managerial career that I think perfectly sums it up, or his career at Milan anyway. The 5-0 that we lost at Atalanta in 2019-20 versus last season when the pressure was 10 times as high to get a result, to get the win, to get into the top four. And that was one of our most well-rounded performances. I know we won with two penalties, but to stop them scoring in a game that they also needed to win in, really, that was just incredibly professional performance. And I was chuffed to bits with that. That, to me, showed his development as a coach perfectly because he'd figured out how to beat a team that had been his kryptonite. So, yeah, fair dues. Final one from Wolfgang. If we win the Scudetto, what do you guys think about signing Vlahovic? And do you think it would be financially possible?
I think we sign him whether we win the Scudetto or not.
You think that he's the guy?
No, I don't think he's a guy. But I also think that top four, it just takes top four. It doesn't need this.
Because we're freeing up Zlatan's contract at the end of the season. There's no way he renews. There's very little chance we even allow it, even if he wants to. I mean, he said he's going to play until he can't. But then he also said that he needs to take it slow and he can't be there for everything this season because he's just not what he was. So why are we putting all that faith in him? I mean, he's my favorite player of all time. I'm not slating the guy. But next season, he'll be 41 years old. Is that who you want leading your line on $8 million a season or $6 million a season, whatever it is? Like, free up that contract. Give him a role inside the club that's not hurting your salary cap. Bring in a guy like Vlahovic if he continues to do well. Like I think that makes the most sense. So I think that's
disclaimer about Zlatan, and I think this was cleverly negotiated. Apparently, his $7 million net salary for this season is actually $3.5 million fixed, and the rest of it is bonuses based on appearances and goals. So we've protected ourselves there.
That's really nice.
Yeah. And I think he would be happy to sign that as well, knowing like I might not be able to give you everything this year, unfortunately.
Yeah, so that's really cool, actually.
That was good. And also, like, if he was still holding up, he may even do another season, but then it would have to be like $2 million fixed, and
he'd have to accept the bench role. There's no way.
Yeah, he really would. He almost impacts sort of like Luca Toni towards the end of his career, kind of thing. Yeah, Vlahovic to me, I mean, he started the season really well. Again, he scored over 20 last season. He's going to be in big, big demand, especially because I don't think he's going to renew his contract, which expires in 2023. Now, that's 2 years' time, but obviously come next summer, it'll be 1 year, and Fiorentina will be left with a position like Chiesa, I guess, where they have to sell because they want to generate the money that they feel that he's worth. And I think we'll be knocking on the door. I think we want a long-term option for the centre-forward position, and then we can transition Giroud at 35 to being a backup again, which is probably fair on him. I mean, he's got back pain. It's like he's 70 years old or something, but he'll come back fine from that. I think that'll be the big investment we make next summer. We'll be in a new striker. I think we'll try to get creative again with potentially bringing in a new winger. Apart from that, pretty much everything looks like it might be set. Maybe another centre back if Romagnoli leaves, but it's not a bad position to be in, where we have a pool of money, hopefully from another top four finish, to allocate into a crucial position moving forward. Happy days, boys. It's been great. So, I mean, I said it last week. Hopefully in a week's time we can review two wins. I didn't firmly believe it last week, but this week maybe. In 7 days, we can be talking about two wins. Let's see. But for the time being, thank you for listening, everybody, if you made it this far. And also, we'll pass on condolences to the family of Jimmy Greaves, ex-Milan player, Spurs legend, passed away over the weekend, which was sad. A legend of English football as well. On that note, I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. Find me on Twitter, at Ollie Fisher. It's on the screen if you're watching on YouTube. Been joined by Anthony Torgrew.
Yes, it's been a really good one. Thanks to everyone who listened. Our viewership keeps going up. The likes keep going up, and it means a lot to us. So thank you very much.
Yeah, comments keep on going up. Shit talking to me keeps on going up. So bring it on. It was a good one.
Everyone get involved in the comment section. Comment your tops and flops for each game and all that kind of stuff. And if you agree or disagree with any of our views, the more interaction, the better. And we really appreciate everybody who watches and gets involved with the community that we're trying to build. So, yeah, thank you very much. And we'll catch you in a week's time.
Ecco l'Anteante in area di rigore. Anteante, Ibra, gol. Vediamo se è buono. Ce l'ho da buono.